The Athletic.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish podcast.
It's the Fulhamish podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC, brought to you by The Athletic UK. It's happened again. 2012 was the last time QPR beat us at their ground, and it doesn't really get much better than this, does it? Away win in the sunshine, comfortable win, hilarious crowd antics, Fulham edging closer to promotion with a solid 2-0 victory against our local rivals. It was just one of the great Fulham away days, and it will be one that will live long in our memories. What a joy it is to support Fulham Football Club right now. Drink it in while this is happening, because it sure as hell is not going to be the same as this next season. We're going to be, you know, we've set up for some dark times, so just really, really embrace this last stretch into promotion. And I mean, yeah, we've had just the most amazing record against QPR. We've only had two defeats in the last 19 in all competitions. Two goals from Alexander Mitrovic. That's 37 from 36 from our big man up top. It's just getting a bit silly now, isn't it? I'm George Cooper. I must admit, I'm feeling slightly worse for wear after yesterday's celebration. I was hoping that my panelists would be looking somewhat fresher, but Dom, I think you two are in the depths of a hangover.
I'm in the depths of hell. I don't know about a hangover, mate. But yeah, how are we all?
Yeah, good, man. Well, give us a little rundown of your antics yesterday, then.
Got to the pub at like 9:45 in Clapham Junction. Had a few there. Went to the game. Went back to Clapham Junction. Then ended up in Fulham, then up at my other mate's flat, and then got in about 2 a.m, I think. My entire family time. Probably hate me, because I probably got in at 2 a.m, singing. I think my sister stormed down and said, can you shut up? I think I left broken glass on the floor. But overall, you know, normal Don Betts weekend, to be honest, isn't it, mate?
Fantastic. Looking considerably fresher is Dan Cook. How are you doing?
Good, mate, Coops. How are you doing?
I am fantastic. And Stephen Sheldrake, how are we?
Oh, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant, George. How are you doing?
I'm very well. I believe you've got some 3-word reviews for us, Stephen, if you wouldn't mind doing the honours.
I feel absolutely honoured to be passed this torch. We had a grand total of 142 reviews that I had to whittle down. There was about 20... absolute belters, yes. There was about 20, it's happened again, which is always... The more you say it, the better it sounds. I absolutely love it. Really, what a crazy good record we have against QPR. I absolutely love it. So let's smash through these reviews. So if you love a bit of alliteration like I do, you've got Alexander's Accumulating Accolades by Rick Cardis. That's quite a juicy one. Nice. As well as Double Derby Destruction by Matt Wall. I should say these are all taken from Twitter. I went across all the channels, but yeah, Twitter's the place to be again, as usual. Mark Holliday had a bit of fun using the QPR... as the three words with questionable penalty rules. I'm sure we'll talk about that later, as well as quality penetrates Rangers. Our very own Sammy James jumped in with 3-point Rangers. Very nice, very popular. But the top two for me, I mean, first of all, you've got Serbian Slaps Queen by Michelle Ababa, which is really funny. I think one of my favorites here is Mitro's Bushfire by Rachel Stevens Hall, of course, referring to Shepherd's Bush Empire or Shepherd's Bush. And yes, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Nice work. Well done, Stephen. Excellent work with the 3-year reviews. And thank you for everyone who got in touch with them. Dom, before we get into the match, I just want to talk to you a bit about QPR as a local rivalry. I know we've got a few in West London, obviously Chelsea and Brentford and what have you. But for me, this is the one. And I think it does change sort of depending on your age and the significance of, you know, like when you first got going to football, who were the most kind of closest to us within the football league. But when I look back at sort of recent games and talking the last kind of 10, 15 years, it's just the best. You know, like 6-0 at home, 1-0 at their place with Pavel Pogrebniak after Zamora and Hughes had left. It's just 4-0. I just love playing QPR. I absolutely live for it. It's the first game that I look at the when the fixture list comes out. Let's be honest, Chelsea don't give a shit about us. Brentford are obsessed with us. However, we've only really started playing them, you know, as equals in recent times. Obviously, they're in the Prem now, but you know, it just doesn't have the same spice. I just wanted to ask you, where does QPR rank for you in terms of our rivalries?
It's changed over the years. Like, there was a point, obviously, when we were both in the Premier League where I sort of have it highest. Then in recent seasons, it's sort of probably been the third, because obviously Chelsea's always going to be top for me, and then it's between Brentford and QPR. I think the biggest issue is this is the first time us and QPR have been sort of competing for the same thing within a league season. Because usually we're in the Prem then Championship, or when we're in the Championship and we've been good recently, they've been just about surviving. So I think it's the first time we've had an actual sort of competitive rivalry with QPR, I would say, in quite a long time. Probably since that loss in 2012, and also that season, I think we beat 3-2 at home as well that season when we went 3-0 up at half time. But yeah, I said I always look out for QPR because it's a guaranteed 3 points. I think I've only seen us lose at Loftus Road once in that 2012 game where we were just absolutely awful and able to run the game. But you know, you said the Pogrebniak game, you know, there was the Hansen game when Rufont put the penalty pretty much in the upper tier. Yeah. It's just whenever we go to Loftus Road, I feel comfortable that we're going to win. And that was the case yesterday. But yeah, QPR's a weird one for me. Like, I feel like I don't really care until the week we're playing them. I hate them that week and then after. But I think that's got to do with the competitive rivalry thing where we haven't really been sort of competing for the same thing. And yeah, at least this season, there's been a bit more of that.
Yeah, fair enough. Dan, we'll just move on to the lineup now. So a few interesting changes going into the match. A start for Joe Bryan. I think that's probably due to the fact Robinson was away on international duty recently. So that kind of makes sense. BDR, again, coming in on the left-hand side for knee skins. I thought Bryan was solid yesterday. I thought it was a very wise move bringing him in. It was a very tight, condensed pitch at Loftus Road. And I think that it was a sort of game that we could really do this delivery. How do you think our left-hand side fared in general?
I thought it was good. I thought Joe Bryan did play well. I've seen people maybe giving him maybe a little bit too much praise. I thought he was good, and I thought Bobby played fine. But quite clearly, I thought we were far better down the right than we were the left. I think that's where we got all of our joy. It was Nico Williams and Harry Wilson again combining and causing issues down that right-hand side. Whereas on the left, we didn't really get that much joy. I think I would have liked to have seen from Joe a little bit more. And I don't know why we didn't do it, because he has got the ability, is just a little bit more of a delivery from him. There were times when we got down that left-hand side and he took that safe option of just finding Bobby out on the left, a bit deeper on the pitch. And if it's Neeskens in that position, I think that's okay, because I back Neeskens Cabano in a one-on-one situation with a defender. But Bobby doesn't necessarily look to take his man on in the same way. And so in those situations, I would have liked to have seen Joe put in a few more balls into the box, because as we saw in the home game and again yesterday, Mitrovic is all over Rob Dickey. Like, Rob Dickey is considered a very good Championship centre-back and has received a lot of plaudits this season. And Mitrovic has made him look silly twice. And so I would have liked to have maybe seen him put under more pressure from balls into the box. But otherwise, I thought Joe was, yeah, he was solid. It was a good performance, but I wouldn't necessarily say he set the world on fire.
I feel he perhaps would have done had that dipping volley from about 30 yards out. It's funny, is it?
Me and Sammy were stood next to each other yesterday, and when that happened, Sammy was sort of happy it didn't go in, because he was just waiting for all of the messages that would have come in on Twitter about the Joe Bryan, Anthony Robinson debate if Joe Bryan sticks a volley away from 25 yards.
It is the never-ending debate that we seem to be just going over for an eternity. And like, yeah, but yeah, fair enough. Do you think, I thought that just particularly down that left-hand side, this was a sort of game that was crying out for Neeskens Cabano. It's very tight, and his sort of footwork and trickery. There's a very interesting stat that I saw Peter retweet. It was originally from Mark Carey. There's some stats about Fulham FC this season with or without Neeskens Cabano. So when he starts, we win 70% of the time. And when he hasn't started, we win 40% of the time. Just quite telling. Do you think it was the sort of game that we could have done with Cabano from the off, maybe, Dan?
Potentially. I do. I think Bobby played fine, but I couldn't see necessarily what the tactical... I guess the only tactical reason I could see for it was Moses Odubajo getting up that QPR's right flank, and yeah, just Bobby helping out a little bit and doubling up. But QPR didn't really pose that much of a threat down that flank anyway. And so I think that might have been Marco Silva's thinking behind it. You know that Bobby offers a little bit more defensively because he has experience of playing in defensive positions now. So I think that it was maybe more of a look at sort of mitigating against QPR's risk rather than us profiting going forward. But I think it worked in the end. I mean, we've come out with the win. Would I have liked to have seen Niskins causing as much issue on the left as we saw Harry Wilson and Nico Williams on the right? Yes, probably. But from a pragmatic sense, we've come away with 3 points. So I think it's justified.
Yeah, too right, too right. Stephen, let's come on to the goal. I mean, just a fantastic move. Kearney, Fabio, Mitro, it seemed to just be in the net within a flash. I thought, whilst our class meant that we were the better team overall for those opening minutes, it was a typical derby game, really. It was very tight. There wasn't really much flow to the game. And I feel like if QPR had gone ahead and got the crowd going, we would have been in for a very different afternoon. How important do you think it was that we secured that first goal?
Oh, of course, like with every Fulham game, it's so important that we get that first goal, because we know statistically how much we struggle when we fall behind. I think Fabio showed how important he was to the team yesterday, and he was one of the standout performers in terms of the pockets of space that he was finding, and that kind of Fabio Mitro link up that we've seen so often this season. It was really good to see that come back. And of course, Mitro doing what Mitro does best, beating the defender and tapping it in. You know, we don't care how it goes in, as long as we're getting the goals and getting the lead. And it was a crucial moment. And looking at the bigger picture, I think this win is going to be really pivotal. You think about the last couple of poorer performances we had with the draw and the loss. Coming back from the international break, grabbing 3 points off QPR to really set ourselves aside from those playoff teams is absolutely crucial. So I'm just so pleased. However we win the game, especially against our rivals, and I say, yeah, absolutely bring on Wednesday now.
I think I'd like to add for the goal as well is that I think it's a great example of sort of the importance of sort of a tempo change, especially when you're controlling the ball in the game. You know, we weren't quick at all times yesterday. I think that would have bothered Marco slightly. But in that moment is where we were controlling the ball. And then in a split second, we just changed the tempo and we upped it. And suddenly it was 3 one-touch passes and we're in. And I think that's really important, because you can't do that all the time. It's important to pick your moments in games when you just switch that tempo up. You take it up to the next level, and that's when you create chances. And I think it was brilliant.
Obviously, it was a solid performance and we were on top. You know, by far the better teams definitely deserve 3 points. But I don't feel like we were particularly at our best yesterday. And there was a spell in the second half, particularly when we started to let QPR gain a bit more possession. They were creeping in. They were having some opportunities, having some chances. And you're thinking, all of a sudden, approaching the sort of 60, 70 minute mark, if QPR get a goal here, you know, it's a completely different game. And I just wanted to ask what you think Fulham did well in relation to absorbing that QPR pressure that then ultimately meant that we could get on the, you know, get the penalty and win the game. But that period of 20 minutes, what impressed you about Fulham?
I liked, and so I think some people have spoken about the second half and said that, you know, QPR had their moments and stuff. Whereas I sort of slightly disagree. I thought we actually quite managed the game quite well. And what I liked, what we did, was we drew QPR further and further forward. They made what I thought was an incredibly attacking substitution in bringing Elias Chair on for Stefan Johansson. And in that moment, I think we understood that, look, if we just bring them out, we're going to have our chances. And we saw it, you know, we got the penalty, but also after that as well, just the number of times we were able to get in behind. And we've seen that times from Fulham this season, is that we're very smart in those moments when teams are really getting up towards us. We just look to pick them off on the counter. And I thought that was what was really important in that second half. And I think part of it also comes down to, and we've seen it creeping in more and more as the fixtures sort of piled up, is that there is an element of not just game management, but sort of season management. You know, we were going through that period when we were putting 6 and 7 past teams. But now when you're getting to that crunch end of the season, you've got, you know, we've got Borough Wednesday, and then we're back playing again at the weekend. You need to preserve as much energy as possible. And I think that was sort of sensible from us. You know, I think we probably could have done, if we'd gone all guns blazing, we could have gone out and won that game 4 or 5 nil in the second half, but we don't need to. So I think that was good from us. It would have been great, obviously, to humiliate them at Loftus Road, but you've got to be also looking at Borough on Wednesday.
Yeah, it's 100% the right tactic to go down that route. Dom, very briefly, was it a penalty?
No. Like, what I didn't get, I was talking about it after, I was talking about it at work today. I was like, how his arm's next to his body, the ref obviously doesn't originally give it, the players and fans call handball, but I don't see the lino flagging to the ref saying, oh no, it's handball. He sort of just So, all right, I'll give them the penalty then. Why not? I said when it first happened, I didn't think it was a penalty. I thought both our penalty shouts weren't penalties. The Harry Wilson dive where he's going, or he should have just had a shot. He's going away from goal. And then that one, I said, I watched it back straight after the game when I saw someone put it on social media. And I was like, I don't really understand how. I understand that it's hit his hand, but he's not moving his arm to the ball in an unnatural way or anything. But yeah, I'll take it. But yeah, in no way did I think that was a penalty.
I actually disagree. I think it was really stupid from Lee Wallace. I think I don't know if it was necessarily a penalty, but he does sort of nudge his arm towards. If you watch it, he sort of just flicks his shoulder over, and I'm not sure why he's felt the need to do it, because he's unnecessarily brought a decision about that. It's going to hit him in the body anyway. So I thought it was one of those, just a silly moment, just a poor bit of decision making. And actually, out of everyone in that moment, he was the least annoyed at the decision. I was watching Lee Wallace the whole time. It was actually Johan Barbe who lost it at the referee, and Lee Wallace was almost just accepted it.
Yeah, I didn't think it was a penalty. I agree with Dom. I thought his arm was by him side. But I know what you mean about when he flicked his arm up, but that was after the ball had already hit him. So maybe it was just some sort of like reflex. But I mean, I'd feel pretty hard done by if I was QPR, to be quite honest. Oh, but
definitely. I don't think it's a penalty, but I think it was poor decision-making from Lee Wallace.
Yeah, too right. Stephen, were you at the game yesterday? Were you watching at home from telly?
I was watching at home on the telly, so I had the absolute joy of listening to the QPR commentator saying, "We've been given the rough end of the pineapple," and
that's not a saying.
That's not a saying. I've never heard that before in my life.
I mean, what a visual. Yeah, what a visual to have on a Saturday afternoon with a crumpet. Do you know what I mean? Like, bloody hell. It was so funny. It was so good. Like, everyone who was at the game missed out. Like, this commentary was amazing. And he also went on to say, "Are you happy, ref? Yeah, your team's won." And I was just like, my goodness, you are so salty. Like, your team's had like one half shot on target and you're like crying about it. And it was just beautiful. It was just beautiful.
Fantastic. Yeah, there were some really, really top quality sort of crowd moments from yesterday. The Fulham fans and the Fulham faithful really did us proud. The atmosphere was fucking electric. Shouts out to the dude who is in the home end, who was wearing a Fulham shirt at the end. Just absolute set of balls on you, lads. That was very enjoyable for all of us in the away end. Also, the guy who ran onto the pitch after Mitro's penalty and then lost his hat and then proceeded for Mitro, just launched it into the crowd. That was good fun. There was also another funny moment, I think, was just like contained to the pocket that I was in right behind the goal. But there was this... this is testament to how quiet Marek Rodak's afternoon, that there was a pigeon that just kept sort of like landing within a few feet in the box, and the chant, your pigeon's offside, your pigeon's offside. That was quite funny. I mean, Stephen, how do we sound on the telly? Was it all Fulham? I imagine it was.
Oh yeah, it was glorious. It was so good. You know, if we could play them every week, that'd be great.
Yeah, good stuff.
It's a nice compact ground. You know, I remember going down to Loftus Road back in the day, and you know, whilst it's a shithole, excuse my French, it is, you're really close to the pitch and you feel like you're really part of the game, and like it does have that really good atmosphere.
I mean, well, you can only just about see the goal from the upper tier.
Yeah, too right. Did you guys see the Fulham goalkeeping coach, Hugo, I think it's Hugo Oliveira, his touch? Look it up on Twitter. I think Peter Rutzler retweeted it. I'm not sure, it might be on Fulhamish, but it is the most outrageous touch you've ever. It's like Berbatov-esque. He takes it down and does a few keepy uppies, and then I think that's just before it all kicked off in the dugout. And I think QPR backroom staff got sent off. Oh, anyway, very 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 enjoyable all round. Dom, I just want to ask you about. So there have been reports in the back pages that Mark Warburton is now set for the sack following this game, having won only one in their last six games. Do you think that this is the right move for QPR at the moment, or do you think it's a bit of a knee-jerk sort of after a derby loss?
I think it's a bit of a knee-jerk reaction, but it's not just on this game. They've been a sort of fairly poor run of form recently. You know, what was it, only a month or two ago when they were talking about potentially challenging us and Bournemouth for top two, and now what they're sitting is it 10th place, I think? So, or 9th place. It's like, I don't think the sacks, I think they are going in the right direction, QPR, if you compare to what since he's come in, he's done better than any manager has there since probably Harry Redknapp got him promoted via the playoffs in 13-14. So, I don't think it's need be. I think Mark Warburton is doing good things there. Obviously, QPR fans will be annoyed because at one stage, if someone said they'd be in 10th place or they wouldn't finish in the playoff positions, then you called them crazy because they were on all guns. So I think he just needs to get back to how they were playing sort of at the turn of a year, really. I think, you know, if it was under sort of previous management QPR, we probably would have battered them 5-0 or 6-0 yesterday. So I think it way too much of a knee-jerk reaction. I think Warburton is actually doing quite good things there.
Fair enough. Also, I thought it was quite nice to see Stefan Johansson get such a pleasant reception from all four corners of the ground. I bumped into Sammy at half time and I mentioned this point to him and I said, oh, it was quite nice to see Stefan get a good reception. He's like, I don't buy it. Let's not forget he moved to our local rivals. Yeah, I'm not having it.
We kicked him out more than he left, but you know, we'll. I said I'm not really that bothered with Johansson, whether gets good reception or not. Really, he's a QPR player. You know, if he's joined them, he's just an ex-Celtic player to me now, isn't he? So,
yeah, fair enough.
Full and reject.
Dan, before we move on to the next section, who's your man of the match? Have you got any hot takes following the game?
I thought Harrison Reed was brilliant. I thought he was exceptional, and I think And off the ball, which was the important thing, because I think the only times I think we looked troubled was if we, you know, when you've got Kearney and Fabio Carvalho in the midfield, you're going to have to do a lot of work as Harrison Reed in that situation, and as he usually does. And I thought he was superb in covering up between the lines in front of the back four. And I thought his distribution was acceptable. I think he's very comfortable in possession. I thought he was brilliant, but definitely a shout out to Tim Ream, who had one of his best matches in recent memory. And that's not saying he's been bad recently, because I think he's been consistently good. But he just hit a different level yesterday. And the other thing that I thought was exceptional about him was his distribution. The number of times, if you just watch back the game, the number of times he's received, you know, he's intercepted a pass and first time, without even taking a touch, he's just playing off these balls out wide or into TC in the middle. I thought he was exceptional. And I think he was at the heart of everything good about us yesterday.
Yeah, I would have to echo that point as well. I thought Tim Ream was brilliant. I also thought Kearney had a great game. It was a sort of game where in the middle, you know, as I've said, very tight combat. There's not a lot of space there. We needed his creativity. And I think he really, you know, pulled the strings for large parts. So just looking towards our imminent promotion. So these stats are from our friend Cottage Analytica. So the earliest possible promotion is now the 9th of April, even though Fulham don't actually have a match on that game, which would happen with Forest losing to Birmingham, having already lost to Coventry, and if Fulham beat Borough. Not very likely though. More probable dates are Forest dropping points versus Luton in the lunchtime kickoff on the 15th of April, Fulham picking up points at Derby that evening, Forest dropping points against West Brom on the 18th of April, and then Fulham picking up points at home against Preston on the 19th of April. Stefan, like, when do you think it's going to happen, or is this whole thing just absolutely mind numbing and the number crunching, the different variables, and we should just like let it happen when it happens? What's your take?
So the kind of pessimistic side of me is like looking at the table being like, the worst that we could finish now is in eighth position, you know, and every week I'm like, oh, this is now the worst. And then of course, you know, the optimistic side of me is like, we could beat Bournemouth and win the freaking title and it'll be an absolute shithousery and it'll be brilliant. So, this is absolutely incredible. I love it. And the closer we get, the better it feels. And, you know, Mitro's 5 goals off that record as well. So it's all falling into place. So we just need to keep the momentum going.
Good stuff. Dom, if you could choose, what game would you want to secure it?
I said promotion is the game we scored promotion. I'm not really that bothered by, because I think it is just inevitable. I'm more interested in when we secure the title than anything, because obviously we've seen us get promoted what, 2 times in the last 4 years, whatever it is, whereas we haven't won a title since what, 2001. So I when it comes to promotion, I just, as long as it's not next weekend, so I can't go to the game on Sunday. but no, Derby or Preston. But I said I really want to lift the title against Forest at home, just because it's my birthday.
Oh, there we go. What better birthday could you ask for? All right, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back for part two with some of your listener questions.
This is an advertisement for BetterHelp, a portal for finding online therapy. How's your social battery right now? If you feel a bit drained or lacking enthusiasm to meet all the social commitments in your life, then that can be a totally normal thing, especially with things picking up as we head out of winter. I know that pretty frequently a weekend just doing a few chores and watching the football was about the limit of my energy resources. But therapy can be a place to help you gain the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your batteries. Contrary to popular belief, therapy isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. The overall goal is to empower you to be the best version of yourself. And if therapy is something you've considered, then why not give BetterHelp a try? BetterHelp is entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. They'll match you with a UK mental health professional with a wide variety of expertise. There's no referral needed, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge, giving you complete control over the whole experience. Fulhamish listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/fulhamish. That's betterhelp.com/fulhamish.
Welcome back. It's the Fulhamish podcast. I'm George Cooper and I'm joined by Dom Betts.
Hello, hello.
It's just, I timed that just as you took a massive glug of Fanta. Dan Cook.
Hello.
And Stephen Sheldrake. How are we doing? Are we good?
Hello, everyone.
Fantastic. Right, we've got a question from our very own AF. He said, I had a wonderful time yesterday. Can somebody please locate my shoulders as I believe they were stolen during the second goal celebrations? Have you guys got just woken up today with a load of sort of miscellaneous bruises around about your shins and from the celebrations yesterday? Or is it just me?
Oh, I think I've got miscellaneous bruises. I don't know if they're from the celebrations though.
Well, they're from the tear up that you had with QPR.
Yeah, of course. Down Shepherd's Bush. Naughty little scrap.
Good stuff. We've got a couple of questions now from Carlino. So Dan, I'm going to throw this one to you. Once promotion is secured, should we start playing in a new formation to prepare for the Premier League? For example, three at the back and wing backs.
I don't think that's the route we're going to go down anyway in the Premier League. And just to throw a little line out there, me and Ben might potentially be looking at this on the whiteboard in terms of how we're going to look in the Premier League. But I don't honestly think that that's the way we'll go. And also, I just don't think it really is it doesn't make that much of a difference, because you're playing a new system against teams that you'll be expecting to beat anyway, and I don't think you get a true barometer of how that's going to work, you know, when you're playing championship teams that you're not going to be playing next season. I think what more likely is going to happen next season is that we potentially have a similar shape but a slightly different method, which I think is harder to implement, especially in games when teams are going to be willing to let us have the ball a lot. I think it's going to be harder to implement a different philosophy, because I think we'll almost get forced back into having that possession. So I don't think that's something I would expect to see. I'd be much more expect similar system, but maybe some new faces or some younger faces, but a system would stay the same.
Fair enough. I mean, it's an interesting point, isn't it? Because this is the first time in recent years if all goes well, we have the luxury of time. And you think that those extra few weeks or even months preparation could put us in good stead. But it'll be very interesting to see when those, you know, plans start getting implemented.
It does remind me of Football Manager when you're doing pre-season and you're trying out a new system and you beat every team 6-0 and then you lose 4-1 on the opening day and you're like, oh, brilliant. Yeah, I haven't created the best tactic ever.
Come crashing back down to earth. This is the second question from Carlino. I'm going to chuck this one to Dom. Anguissa is still on the books. Do you think he comes back for the Premier League?
I hope he don't. And I know you. I know you're in agreement there, George. Anyway, because it's any question regarding Anguissa. No, I just think, why? Like, I want to. You want to? As much as he is a good player, I just think his time at Fulham's done now. I expect Napoli to exercise their signing clause in the deal. I just think it's his time at Fulham's done here. Really, I think there's no need to bring him in. I think we sell him on, get as much money back as we can. And then if we are going to sign central midfield, which I think is probably the last area we should be looking at strengthening this summer, if you ask me, but obviously a striker with Mitrovic. But yeah, I don't really want him back in the side. I like what they have in the team at the moment. And I think, yeah, a centre midfielder, isn't really a key area for us necessarily to be, you know, strengthening in quotation marks.
Just as a counterpoint, and this is a hill that I keep foolishly putting myself on and getting shot down by every other Fulham fan I know, is that he has played a pivotal role in a side that is currently level on points at the top of Serie A. And whilst you've got all that backstory of like, you know, he's come, he's gone, he's not always been brilliant for us. I don't know if we could feasibly get a better central midfielder than him, just on a purely footballing basis. Whether he'll actually come back, I doubt it, because, I mean, Napoli have got him for a snip if they exercise that option, I think. But I think in terms of his footballing ability, I am a massive fan of him. And if you look at the numbers he churns out, it's ridiculous. I think the only thing he doesn't have in his game is putting the ball in the back of the net. Otherwise, I think he's got everything.
I just feel like maybe he's suited to football on the continent as opposed to this Fulham team, really. We've seen it when he was on loan at Villarreal before. We've seen it this season, obviously, at Napoli and how well he's doing in Serie A this year. I just think when it comes to playing for Fulham in the Premier League, it just simply doesn't really work.
I just worry that sometimes we colour certain players based on us being rubbish for 2 years in the Premier League. Like, there are certain
I'm not saying he's a bad player. I just don't think he's ever going to suit a Fulham team trying to avoid relegation.
I know, but I think from sort of the outside,
if he was at West Ham, let's say, or if he was at Wolves, for example, he'd probably do really well. But I just think for a team who's going to be battling to avoid the drop, I just don't know if he's doing so well at Napoli, I don't really think he'd want to come back, to be honest.
No, and I don't think he will. It's just in an ideal world, I do think he's a magnificent footballer.
I think there's 2 points there, just to chirp in myself. I think the question is, you know, can he do it in the Premier League? And I would argue yes. And I agree with Dom. Is Fulham the right club for him? No, in my opinion. Stick him in a Chelsea, a West Ham, like you say, where the strength of the squad overall is really high, and you're not, you know, we rely on our central midfielders to play such an important defensive role to, you know, stop us leaking in the goals. And I think he's a player of flair and quality, and he needs the freedom to just stroke the ball around and have fun and not have those certain pressures. So yes, he's good enough. And yes, it's amazing that we have him or we get some money from him. And overall, you know, a good signing, a great signing. But is he right for Fulham next season? I'm going to say no.
How much do you think we would get for him if Napoli do? Is there already a built-in thing into the contract?
It's 15 million euros, I believe, which is quite a sad fee, really. I think, but hey,
considering how much we paid for him as well, but yeah,
accounting wise, I believe it works out as technically as a profit based on how the fee amortizes over the length of the contract and that sort of stuff. So, sort of purely FFP wise, it would account as a slight profit, which is a good thing.
Okay, the business cool. Seems to be a lot better from the Fulham people in charge compared to where we, you know, started off all guns blazing, signing everyone under the sun for millions and millions. So
Anguissa was part of that spending spree. Let's not forget. Yeah. I mean, we've got a question here from Steph Bond, Steve, and I'm going to throw this one to you. It's on this point. How confident are we that transfers in the close season will keep us up? Will the Khans get it right this time? I bloody hope so, is what Steph Bond says. I think credit where credit's due. You know, the team that are in charge of the transfers have done this year going into this championship season a really, really good job, you know, and really finessed it, you know, look at the way that the Harry Wilson deal has gone through. Do you feel like they're learning and getting better each time, and could this recruitment charge coming to help us stay up in the Prem? Do you think this will be the time that it gets, you know, we get it really right?
Yes, I bloody hope so as well. I feel a lot more confident. I think when they first joined, you know, the Khans, we can't fault the amount of money they've spent on this club. It's been absolutely amazing. I think they were naive when they came in at first, and they maybe thought, hey, here's some statistics that my machine has churned out. That means these players are perfect, and let's just spend all the money and we'll be laughing, which clearly didn't happen. But they were great players that they signed, i.e. Anguissa, and now Seri's, you know, come into prominence. So I hope we extend his contract into the Premier League, because I think he's good enough. So yeah, looking at some of the recent deals, you know, Wilson, what a fantastic buy, what a fantastic deal to get him in, despite all the, you know, financial restraints going on. I hope that Tony Khan's learnt a lot, and you know, the team around him. I feel a lot more confident. That, coupled with the fact that we should go up automatically and there won't be the dreaded playoffs, and we can start planning a bit earlier, planning more intelligently with Marco Silva at the helm as well. I'm really excited to see the talent that we bring in, and I'm full of confidence.
I think the big thing that people should take as a positive, and this isn't me Tony Khan bashing, but I think this season some of the signings that we made were very much Marco Silva's signings. They're players that Marco Silva specifically wanted, and I don't think would have even been thrown up as sort of ideas without him. And I think that suggests that maybe we're seeing a little bit more balance in how our recruitment works, where the manager is having a more say on the players he wants for the way he wants to play, which I think is really important.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, I mean, given how well he's done this year as well, you think that he will only be granted more freedom, more permission to get the people he wants in, because, you know, it's a proven concept. This is, you know, potentially the greatest championship team of all time, which is a question. Can he help you? Version two has got in with Twitter. Dom, are we the greatest championship team of all time?
Well, unless we get the records point total, no.
Is that how you measure it though? You, whoever's got the,
so I think the more points you get, the better side. Well, I always use this argument when I talk about the Invincibles. I think the Invincibles are overrated from Arsenal. I think that they're lucky to be in my top five Premier League teams of all time. I think you can
measure it by the strength of the league as a whole, and, you know,
yeah, that's another reason why,
and the
strength of the league is another reason
and...
why I'd say this team necessarily isn't, because look at the Wolves team that got promoted, even the Newcastle team the year that them and Brighton went up. So I think it's one of the best, but I wouldn't say you can dead cert say it is the best. You know, is it even better than our team in 2001? You know, I think a lot of people get caught up in the moment when their team is storming the league like this. I think Mitrovic is the greatest striker this league's ever seen, but I don't necessarily think this team as a whole is about, you know, you got the Sunderland team who I think got 100 points, you got Reading who got 100 points. So I think it's hard to say, really. I think it's up there, but I don't think you can look at his team and say it's the best, because they have had games where they have been poor, you know. So it's not like, I think that it is, there's small inconsistencies sometimes in this team, which I don't think would put them up as being one of the best championship teams of all time.
Fair enough. It's such a, you know, it's I guess a pointless debate, because there's no way of actually, you know, you can't make a sort of mega league and put them all together. So, but it's always a fun discussion anyway. This is the most fun I remember I've had supporting Fulham for quite some time. So I guess that's got to count for something, has it not? This is another one from Kenny Help You version two, the new improved Kenny Help You Twitter account. I'm going to chuck this one to all of you. Player of the season, can't say Mitro. Start with you, Stephen.
Oh, starting with me. That's so cruel. I'm going to go off the cuff. I don't think a lot of people will agree with me. I'm doing this out of passion, I think. I can't believe I'm saying this. I'm going to say Tim Ream, and that's purely because I love him. And I'm very sad that in about 8 games time, he will most likely not be with us anymore. I just think he puts his body on the line. You know, you saw when he cut his head open like a couple of weeks ago. He's just such a fantastic man, and he does so much for our club. And, you know, our defensive record just this year has been great. Couple that with the fact that we're such a full-on attacking side, it puts more pressure on the defenders. And I just love him because he's a leader and a hero for me. So I appreciate probably about 2% of the fan base agree with me there, but I'm going Tim Ream.
I don't think it's that much of a crazy shout, to be honest, mate. I think he's having a phenomenal season. He's been so consistent, and pair that with all the stuff he does off the pitch as well. I think that's a very valid point, and I don't necessarily disagree with you. It's arguably his best campaign in a Fulham shirt, and it really made me laugh on the and slightly sad on the writers' room pod when Drew compared him to Old Yeller, which is like such a good comparison. Like at the end of the season, oh, sorry, boy, come on, your time's up. But yeah, no, not a bad shout at all. Dan, who are you going to go for?
Harry Wilson for me. I think his numbers have been ridiculous, and it's been a fantastic season. I guess the only reason I could argue that it wouldn't be him is that I sort of expected it from him, because the fact that we've got him this season was a fantastic bit of business, and I'm very surprised that actually we managed to get him to come back into the championship. And yeah, he's been at the heart of a lot of good things. I think the only thing is that he does blow a little bit hot and cold sometimes. I think yesterday was a little bit of an example of how, so there are some games when just nothing seems to work for him. It just doesn't quite go right. But when you look at the numbers he's produced throughout the season, the chances created, the goals he's scored, he's added a new dimension to this Fulham team in the sense of the ability to get in behind, the ability to cut inside, the ability to go round his man. Yeah, I think he's been magnificent.
He's been just an absolute joy to watch all year, hasn't he? He's, a fantastic addition to the side. Dom, who are you going for? Someone different or are you picking?
I can say someone different just to be, you know, fun.
That's what we get you on for, Dom. We get your late night anecdotes,
yeah,
sideways views and yeah, fun. So
I'll just say Nisi Skibano because I think he's a magnificent man.
Yeah,
but no, I think I've been crying out for it for all these champion seasons because he's never really had a consistent run in the team where he has had that. I know he didn't play yesterday. I mean, I know he'd been travelling for the country, but I think he only played 6 minutes across their two legs against Morocco. But yeah, just to go someone different, I'd say Nisi Skibano. I think this season has shown what he can do. We don't really have a player like him in regard to a player with taking on his man and absolutely skinning him for dead. So yeah, I'll go with Nisi Skibano just to be different. But if you're going to ask me, I'd probably say Harry Wilson.
Got you. All good. We've got one final question, Matt from Mint City, which I think we sort of covered. Which game would you like to see us win promotion and the title if you could pick any? I think promotion for me is got to be the Coventry game because we've got Fulhamish Live following, that would be just carnage. I'd have to book that Monday off work, I think. I'm going to do that anyway. Which is now sold out as well. So thank you. Just a massive thank you to anyone who got the ticket. All the profits are going to Dex Ukraine Humanitarian Appeal. So, you know, it's all going to a good cause and it's going to be a really fun evening. Yeah. That's it from part two. Don't go anywhere. Part three, we're going to do a little Borough preview and then wrap this up. See you in a bit. Welcome back to the Fulhamish podcast. We are celebrating an emphatic 2-0 away victory at QPR, edging even closer to promotion. We've got a very, very difficult test and a tight turnaround coming up on Wednesday. Midweek, Middlesbrough. I mean, I would absolutely love to be going. I know Sammy's going, but I mean, yeah, it's a long old schlep for a midweek fixture. Dom, are you going to make it to the Riverside on Wednesday?
Yeah, but Borough on Wednesday, Braga on Thursday. Normal week for me, isn't it?
Unbelievable. What have you got on the weekend as well?
It's Coventry at home, which I can't make it to, but I will be at the Fulhamish Live. So it's just, you know, just the two games for me this week. So, you know, quite straightforward for one of my weeks.
Quite quiet. It's a big test for us. It's a very, very difficult game. Middlesbrough have had fantastic home form. I think it's got to go down as one of the toughest games of the season, and it would be like a very big statement of intent if we were to go face Chris Wilder's side and get 3 points. Dan, how do you predict this game playing out? Are you confident we can come back with 3 points, or are you exercising caution?
This might be the most cautious I feel going into any of our recent games. Really, I think they're going to be. It's going to be such a different Borough side to the team we played in the first game of the season. You know, I think that first game of the season was the most Neil Warnock championship game you will ever see.
Completely Warnocked, didn't we?
We got Warnocked to, yeah, whatever. and it was a horrible, horrible game. This is going to be difficult, especially at the Riverside. Their home form has been brilliant. I think the only thing that I'll say is that I think their form has been a little bit patchy of late. They went on a really good run and then a couple of losses crept in. It's going to be tough. We're going to have to watch out. They play in a system that sometimes we see us struggle against, sometimes we see us flourish against, that sort of 3-5-2. I think it's going to very much hinge on can we deal with their wide overloads from the wing backs, and then in return, can we look to exploit the space in behind that they leave? If I could pick sort of a game for us to emulate, Birmingham away feels like the sort of the blueprint for this is a team that looks to get the ball wide and overload. And if we can look to get in behind them round the sides, Harry Wilson was exceptional that evening. I think that's the exact sort of game that we have to be looking at emulating.
Nicking a 1-0 win. And grinding it out, kind of.
I'll take that.
If it can be a shit house as our last 1-0 win there. So if it can be a shit house as that, it'll be a beautiful day.
What was that, Dom?
It can be as shit house as the Ollie Norwood one, where Borough should have had about 8 penalties put nine going by them. And then we got a last minute goal. And then we get one by where if you watch the highlights, you can just see me falling through the advertising hoarding as on the replay. I'm saying it was a weak advertising hoarding. It wasn't me pushing it over. But yeah, it should be. It will be a tough game. I'm pretty sure, as Dan mentioned, their home record. I don't think they've lost at home since end of October in the league or something crazy like that. So Wilder's got them playing good stuff. He's got them tough to beat. And yeah, I think actually this is probably our toughest game left of the season. I'd argue it's even tougher than going away to Bournemouth.
Do you think that they're? I mean, I remember Sammy saying that he was had them absolutely nailed on for promotion. At one point, he was saying the automatic promotion. Do you think that they're the strongest team within that playoff pool?
It's hard to say, really. I think there's a few in there on their day who are very good sides. You've got, obviously, Middlesbrough. You've got Forest, who are just outside the playoff positions at the moment. But considering where they were when we beat them 4-0 on that Sunday, you can see how good their form has been since Steve Cooper's come in. Blackburn, if Brereton Diaz is eventually fit, they're a good side. I think it's hard to say. I'd have a lot of them quite level, but I think there's three or four teams who are in that playoff and who are very good. But yeah, I think Middlesbrough are... I think Middlesbrough potentially out of all those teams would probably be the ones who fare best in the Premier League.
The team I would least like to face in the playoffs, if you gave me a choice, would be Luton. I think Luton would be horrible to get in the playoffs. Going to Kenilworth Road and stuff, I think they turned into a different beast at Kenilworth Road. And I'd hate to play Luton in the playoffs.
Yeah, how nice is it to be able to watch this playoff without actually, pending an absolute capitulation? Maybe I shouldn't tempt fate with this, but assuming that we go up automatically, how nice is it just to watch the playoffs and not thank God we don't have to go through that again? I mean, it's the most high stress, high reward. You go through everything as a football fan watching your team in the Championship playoffs, and it is, I love the system, but it's nice not to be involved, isn't it?
It's so nice. For me, I think Sheffield United will make it in, and Borough and United will be the strongest two teams. But my underdog, who I really want to get promoted, is Luton. I mean, it'd be great to get Luton in the Premier League, and it's still an away day that I haven't done. So I'll be cheering for them as soon as we get automatic promotion.
Yeah, it was a pretty tense away day this year. It's the first time I've been to the ground as well, and it's got so much character. Assuming they'd have to fit within the Premier League's regulation,
Bournemouth's ground's allowed. I can't see why theirs isn't.
Yeah, I mean, it's a valid point. But I mean, it must be pretty small. What's the capacity?
It's 10. It's just about 10 flat, 10,000 flat.
Amazing. I think the more small grounds we can get in the Prem, the better.
Makes us look even bigger.
Yeah, exactly that. Thank you very much, gents. It's been very fun. I think we'll wrap up there. One thing left to do is to name the pods. What are you going to go for, Stephen? You do the honour, sir.
Okay, big thank you to Rachel on Twitter for Mitro's bushfire. Your defence is terrified.
Good stuff. I thought it would be nailed on for it's happened again, but we'll go with this one. It's slightly more, creative. But yeah, all that's left for me to do is to say thank you very much to my amazing panellist, Don Betts.
No worries, mate. Always. Pleasure as always.
Good stuff. Dan Cook, thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, George. Always a pleasure.
And thank you very much, Stephen Sheldrake. We'll be back on Thursday with the Thursday Club. Sammy's back with Jack and Peter. And hopefully we'll be celebrating 3 points after an emphatic 5-0 victory at the Riverside. Whether or not that will happen, I don't know. But yeah, we'll see. You whites, catch you in a bit.